you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Well, welcome back to the Tough Things First podcast. This is kind of a special edition for us. My name is Guy Smith. I'm your guest host today. And of course, we're chatting with Ray Zinn, the longest serving CEO in all of Silicon Valley. And good morning to you, Ray.
Well, good morning to you, Guy. It's a beautiful day outside here anyway.
It certainly is. Hey, listen, I want to dive right into this topic because I noticed that you wrote an article for Forbes magazine discussing China, semiconductors, the future of global economics. And I find this kind of a fascinating topic because we're seeing some what I would consider tectonic shifts in terms of the way technology is aggregated worldwide. And I know that you've got some interesting insights. So let's just dive right in. Why are semiconductors so important to mainland China? What is their long-term game here?
Well, if you recall, going back after the Second World War, we were trying to get Japan back on its feet. And so we introduced the automobile to them. And of course, you saw what happened. They took off and became the world's giant automobile manufacturer. When in 2001, roughly there, when the dot-com implosion occurred, a lot of the manufacturers decided to move their electronic manufacturing to Asia because, number one, they weren't cost competitive. And you know, since the fall off in the dot-com caused the manufacturers then to really lose a lot of money. And these are electronic manufacturers, you know, such as Nort. Can't remember the name of the company now because it's no longer in existence. But the number of these large manufacturers shut down their manufacturing in the North America and Europe and moved to Asian countries. The biggest, of course, was China, mainland China. And so when mainland China looked at the list of a product that goes into an electronic product, it's semiconductors. And so they thought, well, you know, we can gain a great foothold here if we can manufacture the majority of the components for the electronic system. And since semiconductors were the mainstay, that became a focal point for China. And they decided, hey, we're going to become like Japan was back in the 40s and 50s. We're going to become, China's decided to become the go-to country for electronics. And a lot of the contract manufacturers, like Flextronics and the likes, moved to China and set up these large electronic manufacturing plants in China. So a few years ago, we learned that China's main goal, or one of their stated goals, is to be able to supply, nearly all, 100% or nearly all of the semiconductor content directly from China, meaning that China would be the source for the semiconductor components, and for that matter, other components, you know, passives and so forth for the electronic system. And they've been working frantically, you know, to do that, to get their goal accomplished by 2025. And so they've, the country, the government sourced and funding over $18 billion to acquire semiconductor technology. And they're frantically doing that to this very day.
Well, and I think that's one of the fascinating things about the market mechanics at the moment, because even though mainland China is a manufacturing behemoth and they're grinding out gadgets for the entire world, they have to import most of their chips in order to build iPhones and whatnot. And so basically they're trying to do two things: vertically integrate by, you know, building more of their own semiconductors. But there's a political aspect in that Taiwan, who they have this adversarial relationship with, is really one of the powerhouses in semiconductor manufacturing. So by vertically integrating, they end up keeping more of the money, and they knock the legs out from underneath a, you know, political rival there in Asia.
That's correct. The Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing facility, it's actually called Taiwan Semiconductor, is one of the largest semiconductor manufacturing plants in the entire world. They have three or four semiconductor plants spread out over the country of Taiwan, and they are the go-to place for most of the high-tech firms like Broadcom and Cisco and some of the other large consumer of semiconductor components. So nearly all the main, you know, Intel, I think all the main semiconductor manufacturers do use TSMC for their semiconductor components. And obviously China is trying to, you know, capture their unfair share of that capability, which is currently shared by or held by Taiwan.
So do you see mainland China actually making their goals by, I think you said it was 2024? And if so, you know, what then becomes their role in the global marketplace in terms of manufacturing and selling semiconductors?
There's two parts to manufacturing semiconductors. One is the facilities themselves, you know, the plants, to make the product, but there's also the design component of it. In other words, somebody's got to design the product, and that's where they lack a lot. So does Taiwan, as you know, the design capability to do that. Now, with design automation, at least in digital semiconductors, becoming more viable, they can design their own semiconductor products. Using these automated design tools, again, mainly for digital semiconductor products, which, you know, probably comprise of 80% of all semiconductors are digital. You know, memory and microprocessors and the like are digital type products. So that they can probably do through design automation, but somebody's got to come up with a requirement. Somebody's got to say, well, here's what I want. And China is not that way. They don't necessarily start out saying, okay, here's what the world wants. They're more in terms of, okay, tell us what you want and we'll build it type of thing. So the innovation, I don't think is there as much as it is in the U.S. So the U.S. is kind of the innovators of the product, and then China mainland would be the manufacturers of it.
Well, that brings up another interesting geopolitical reality. I've noticed that a number of American companies have been investing in design and innovation centers in India, everyone from Apple to Ford Motor Company. And there have been a lot of reasons why they've justified these investments in India. Given China's disposition to go manufacture what other people tell them that they want, and American industries investing in India for design, do you think there might be a split in the Asian market, that a lot of the design work will eventually float to India, but the manufacturing will float to China?
Could be. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, it, certainly India, which could be the third largest economy in the next 10 years, has come online quickly, and you know, they're a very well educated society, and certainly they have the potential to do that. But I'm hoping anyway that the U.S. wakes up and says, you know, we can't just let the rest of the world do our thinking for us. That we got to do some thinking for ourselves, and so, you know, we still can maintain the edge on making electronic components and products, as opposed just to giving it all away to other countries. Unfortunately, you know, we did this to Japan in the 50s, and we're paying the price for that today. So I'm hoping that that this doesn't happen, that the U.S. government recognizes the flaw in that thinking, that all we're going to do is just be somehow a consumer of things as opposed to a producer.
Well, and that brings up an interesting point, because we are the world's largest consumer of electronic gadgets. China's manufacturing wealth is all, well, not all, but largely contributed by the United States, because we buy the products that they manufacture. So is China going to have to play nice with the U.S., especially given the current administration's willingness to impose trade sanctions where they think appropriate?
Well, I mean, China is willing to fire back. So I'm not sure how much we have frightened them as you would. So China's become a large consumer of electronics themselves, because their country is growing in wealth and capability, and their populace is now becoming a huge consumer of electronics, such as India is also getting on the same track. So, you know, they will ultimately have a large China mainland, that is, will have a large consumer base within their own country. They're many times bigger than the U.S. Size-wise, you know, more than three times our population. And so they have a large pent-up demand in their country. I'm not sure how much clout the U.S. is going to have. What I can worry about is just the security and the capability of protecting ourselves, because electronics go more into than just into consumer products. They go into, you know, military and aerospace type systems. So I'm hoping we retain that technology and the ability to protect ourselves.
Well, not only retaining the technology itself, but having some sort of leading edge expertise in it. A lot of people noted that Japan figured out how to make automobiles a lot better than Detroit was making them. And when you compare a Japanese manufacturing town to, you know, the suburbs of Detroit, you can almost see visually what the net outcome after a couple of decades of that economic shift was. And now Japan is building factories in the U.S., you know, for a variety of reasons, but they still are the ones who are innovating the marketplace probably most. So if China does indeed build a capacity to dominate the semi industry, what does this mean to the world economic order? I mean, there's the military, this national security aspect that you just mentioned, but does it also put a wrinkle into the total economic fabric?
Well, I hate to say this, maybe because I'm a semiconductor veteran, but so goes semiconductor, so goes the world. So I'm not sure everybody who listens to this podcast is going to agree with me, but since our world is highly electronic based, and semiconductors are the hub of that electronic base, I say so goes semiconductor, so goes the world. So if we want to give up our world leadership, certainly we're well on that road to do so by just letting everybody else manufacture semiconductors and developing that technology.
Is there any movement with inside the American semiconductor industry to try to bring more of the work home?
I don't see it yet. It'll have to happen. Intel used to be the world's largest manufacturer of semiconductors, and now it's Samsung, and that's a Korean company. And so I'm not sure what Intel is going to do, or others are going to do, to get that back. You know, IBM sold off their PC or their consumer computers systems to manufacturing to a company called Lenovo. I think it's called Lenovo in China. You know, we're rapidly giving away the technology, much like we did in the 50s to Japan with automobiles. So, you know, it can happen, and it can happen very quickly. And if you remember, you know, I don't know if you remember, because you're probably not old enough, but there used to be a cartoon series, Little Abner, and it used to be General Boom Moose was General Motors. And General Motors, you know, there's a saying, it used to be, you know, so goes General Motors, so goes the world. And General Motors, of course, now is no longer the powerhouse. And even in automotive, they're no longer the powerhouse. I think Toyota is. So, you know, once we go down that slippery slope, you know, of giving away these technologies, much like we did in the automobile industry, we're going to be a second-rate nation. And so we need to wake up and put a halt to this. Otherwise, we are going to lose. Apple, by the way, is currently the world's largest user of semiconductors. And now look what's happening. They're manufacturing nearly all of their products in mainland China. So this trend has to change, or we are going to lose our edge.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well, but I don't think we're so far into the ditch that we can't pull ourselves out. But I think it requires social will as well as political will to make that happen. Well, thank you, Ray. I appreciate it. As again, always insightful on multiple different levels. And for the audience, whatever you do, make sure you subscribe to the Tough Things First podcast. You can do that on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, all the usual outlets. And if you haven't yet, you absolutely have to get a copy of Ray's book, Tough Things First. If you're looking for a head-to-shoulders review of management, leadership, and business philosophy, especially from the entrepreneurial perspective, you can't do better than Tough Things First. So thanks again, Ray. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Scott Guy. Always glad to be with you hosting these podcasts. You give me cause for thinking, and that's good.
Wonderful. Well, we'll chat again soon.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.